This is the Mickey Miles and More podcast, your one stop for information on Disney races, Disney vacations, Disney theme parks, and more. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles and More podcast, Chris Eliopoulos and Mike Scopa.
Welcome back, Milers, and Happy New Year. I'm sure there's a portion of those listening, those of you who are listening, who would recognize names such as Joe Rohde, Marty Sklar, Mark Davis, Tony Baxter, Yale Gracie, John Hench, and even ex Atencio. These are the names of individuals known as Disney Imagineers and have been part of a significant number of things we see, hear, and experience when it comes to visiting a Disney theme park. There is a name I did not include in that list because I didn't think most of you would recognize it. Of course, the hardcore Disney fans would recognize the name of Raleigh Crump. But for most, he is the forgotten Imagineer. Raleigh Crump passed away on March 12, 2023, at the ripe old age of 93, and he left behind quite a legacy. It's a legacy that really has not received much attention, and I thought, as a bit of a tribute to this creative man, I'd discuss what he has given to us, Disney fans, over the last half century. You may be interested in what his imagination has brought to your life, and as I talk about his career, I'm sure you'll at times say to yourself, oh, so he's the one who... Raleigh Crump was born in 1930, and from day one, he was a curious little boy. At an early age, he started doodling and drawing whenever he could get his hands on a pencil and a blank piece of paper. As young Raleigh grew older, his mother noticed her son becoming quite skilled at sketching and also noticed his interest in animation, especially Disney animation. In fact, she even wrote a letter directly to Walt Disney asking Walt to hire her son, who at the time of these letters was around 16. She never heard back and assumed the letters never even got to Walt's desk. In 1951, Raleigh attended a Christmas dinner with some of his mother's friends, and one of those friends worked at animation at Disney Studios. In a conversation with this person, Raleigh mentioned how much he would love to work there. She gave Raleigh the name of someone to contact at the studios, and he followed up. The contact was Andy Eggman and granted Raleigh an interview. Raleigh brought with him his portfolio at the time. Andy Eggman, always looking to add to his animation team, gave Raleigh a specific animation test to see if Raleigh had the skills they could use. Well, Raleigh impressed Andy, and Andy asked Raleigh to come upstairs with him to the business office. And there on the spot, he offered Raleigh an opportunity to work at Disney Animation Studios. Now, at the time, Raleigh was working as a dipper in a ceramic factory. He was making about $75 a week. This Disney opportunity paid only $30 a week. What to do? What to do? He talked it over with his mother, and they both came to the realization that since he was a little boy, that ever since he was a little boy, he dreamed of working at the Walt Disney Company, and now his dream was to become a reality. Why turn it down? He would figure it out. Well, he accepted the job and became an in-betweener, which basically is an animator who draws every other frame in an animated feature. So from Monday to Friday, he worked for Disney Animation. But on the weekends, Saturdays and Sundays, he was a bricklayer and he made $20 a day to manage to make ends meet. Now, he started this job in 1952, and he was an in-betweener for Peter Pan. And from there, he worked on Lady and the Tramp, Sleeping Beauty, and 101 Dalmatians. With each assignment, Raleigh became more and more accomplished with his animation skills. But Raleigh was more than an artist, or I should say, more than an animator. He was interested in many things. In fact, he became interested in back then what was called crystal radio sets. These were very small radios made out of crystal, and Raleigh started making these crystal radios inside walnut shells, and he sold them for about $5 a piece. He was very creative, not just when it came to animation and drawing, but also loved to tinker with lots of things he found interesting. In fact, one day he was talking to one of his colleagues, a guy by the name of Wathel Rogers. Raleigh noticed that Wathel worked with and made like little propellers out of pushpins and clips from pens. Raleigh was pretty intrigued with this type of art, and soon he was making propellers himself. In fact, he would take it one step further and make these intricate kinetic mobiles that he would hang from the ceiling. Little did he realize that this infatuation with propellers would someday lead to, well, I'll tell you later. When Raleigh worked on Lady and the Tramp, his salary went up to $70 a week. But once finished with Lady and the Tramp, his salary was cut back to $30 a week. He did have some side jobs, but he wanted more. He left the Disney company and tried to work as a milkman because he had heard that milkmen earned $100 a week. But he couldn't land that job as a milkman because he did not have the experience to be a milkman. Well, after 6 months out from the Disney company, he was called back by Disney and was asked to come back to help out on a new project. They needed him to work on some animated sequences for a new television show. It was to be called The Mickey Mouse Club, and yes, he would get his full salary. So he was back doing what he loved to do. Now, I want to take a little digression here. Raleigh enjoyed telling stories. He was very close to Walt Disney. He talked a lot with Walt. They got along together. Walt would ask Raleigh to do a lot of things. And Raleigh enjoyed telling a story about how one day Walt was strolling through Disneyland. This was about a year, probably within the first year that Disneyland was opened. Walt would stroll through the park to see if his guests were enjoying themselves. Now, Raleigh knew how important it was for Walt to know that his guests were having a wonderful experience. And as the story goes, nature was calling and Walt looked for the nearest men's restroom. Now, you have to remember that back then, Disneyland had installed restrooms that had both free and paid toilets in the restrooms. Half were free and half were a dime to use. So if you walked in and there were 10 stalls, 5 were free and 5 were a dime. On this particular day, Walt did not have any change on him, so he could not use any of the paid toilets. Obviously, the free ones were always used first, and the ones that you had to pay for were always available. Walt thought about how frustrated this was for him and how it would be frustrating for his guests. So later that day, he contacted the Disneyland Maintenance Department and instructed them to, as soon as possible, make sure that all toilets in every restroom in the park were free and to eliminate the paid toilets. Walt had recognized firsthand the inconvenience for the guests, just as he had experienced inconvenience. Over the years, Raleigh became known for telling such stories unknown by the general public. All right, so let's get back to Mr. Crump. It was in 1959 that Raleigh Crump moved from Disney Animation to Wed Enterprises. It was very common for animators to eventually move from animation to Wed Enterprises to help with Disneyland projects. Raleigh's first project was to work on plans for the Haunted Mansion with Yale Gracie. By the way, have you ever heard the story about Yale Gracie and Raleigh Crump's project room? They had this huge project room where they would try different little exhibits or things that would be placed in the Haunted Mansion. So it was a very interesting room. And it got so interesting that they would play with all kinds of spooky things that they had intended to put in the Haunted Mansion. And the whole room was filled with all these spooky things. Components are really, really crazy. And they had a lot of spooky things in the room, and the janitors always asked that they leave the lights on at the end of the workday when the janitors would come in and clean, because they were a bit nervous entering that room with the lights out. Well, as the story goes, Raleigh and Yale decided to set the room up so that when someone walked in and disturbed a beam of light, then all their gadgets came to life, or some of the real spooky ones came to life. They set that prank up one night, and the next morning, they were told that they would have to clean the room themselves because the janitor said they would no longer go into their room at night. You know, there's so much to say about the Haunted Mansion. Crump always maintained that it would have been a better attraction had it remained a walkthrough. And when you think about it, you know what he was thinking, how people could just stand and linger at some of the things that were really interesting to them. But I think you have to keep the crowds moving. So I think I think turning it into a ride-through was the better choice. You could move large numbers of guests through that attraction. One of Crump's other projects was the Adventureland Bazaar in Disneyland. He designed a shop where you could where guests could purchase trinkets and memories of Disneyland. That was something that he spent a lot of time and he was very proud of. And from there, he was then asked to work on the Enchanted Tiki Room at Disneyland. Walt asked Raleigh to design the pre-show for the attraction, but he did more than that. He sketched out all the tikis that eventually would be used for the show. You can begin to see that Raleigh Crump was getting his hands in a lot of projects. Regarding the Tiki Room, something that a lot of people may not realize is that Raleigh Crump's involvement with the attraction resulted in such an amazing attraction that at the time, for the first year the attraction opened, guests were charged $1 to attend the attraction. It was the most popular attraction in the park. Like I said, Raleigh Crump, sure, he had his hands in a lot of things, but probably one of the most memorable things he's remembered for is what he did with the 1964-1965 New York World's Fair. Now, if you didn't know this, it was the 1964-65 World's Fair that kind of put a halt to a lot of projects in Disneyland, including the Haunted Mansion. And I've always maintained that the 1964-65 New York World's Fair was huge as far as influencing a lot of what we experience today in Disney theme parks. Anyway, it was at the 64-65 New York World's Fair that Walt came to Raleigh Crump and said, you know, I'd like you to design a marquee to put in front of It's a Small World, which was one of the attractions that the Walt Disney Company was putting together for the fair. Now, I want you to think back earlier when I was talking about when Raleigh first came to the Disney Company and he became enamored with those propeller things that Walter Rogers put together, and how Raleigh would design these really crazy propeller mobiles, and he became pretty well known throughout the company as the guy who did all the propeller things. So when Raleigh was asked by Walt to design a marquee, Raleigh did a whole bunch of things. He designed the clock face for the facade for the Small World, but he also built a huge mobile, and it was called the Tower of the Four Winds and had over 100 spinning elements. I don't recall, I can't find anything that tells me how tall it was, but I do know that this huge spinning tower cost $200,000 to build, and it weighed approximately 100 tons. And when the fair closed, this tower was just too much to move to Disneyland. And it really, no one really wanted it at Disneyland, so it was cut into 2-foot sections, and it now resides at the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean. Of course, while working at the fair, one of Raleigh Crump's biggest thrills was working with Mary Blair on It's a Small World. He was a big fan of Mary Blair, and her artistry is shown throughout the attraction. And a lot of people don't know this, but Raleigh and the Imagineers who worked on the attraction paid a tribute to Mary Blair. If you go to Disneyland and go on the It's a Small World attraction, when you go through the France section of the attraction, look at the Eiffel Tower and look at the little blonde doll hanging from that Eiffel Tower. That is their tribute to Mary Blair. Now let's get back to the Haunted Mansion. I told you how New York World's Fair halted a lot of projects, and one of them was the Haunted Mansion. Well, so Yale Gracie and Raleigh Crump were working on it, and one of the things that Raleigh wanted to work on was a certain part of the Haunted Mansion, which he felt very strongly about. Have you ever heard of the Candleman, or the Mistress of Evil, or the Seven Sins of Man? How about the Talking Chair? Well, these were just some of the concepts Raleigh Crump had dreamed up for the Haunted Mansion. He had so many ideas for the Haunted Mansion, and these were classified as weird ideas. His colleagues saw them as being weird, and they began calling the attraction the Museum of the Weird. And this area of the Haunted Mansion, Museum of the Weird, was to reside towards the end of the attraction. Walt himself was all for it. We'll get things from around the world. We'll say they came from around the world, and we'll have this really interesting exhibit and all this stuff. Unfortunately, Walt's passing put a halt to many Disneyland projects. One of these was the Haunted Mansion and the Museum of the Weird. It never happened. Let me tell you a little secret. If you go to Walt Disney World and you go to the Haunted Mansion, you know when you get into the queue and you can go to the left and you go through an area where there are busts and there are things that you can play and put your hands on, there are crypts in there. And on the crypt that is double-sided with the organ that you can play, they have instruments on each side, and when you touch them, they play a familiar ghostly tune. On one of those crypts, there is, on the side, the side opposite the queue, there are drawings on that crypt. And those drawings are from the Museum of the Weird. Those are original drawings from Raleigh Crump. And now you know. From 1967 to 1969, Raleigh Crump served as the supervising art director for Disneyland. And during that stint, in that position, he did several things that improved both the guest and the worker experience. One of the things he did was convert the white chains that were used in the attraction queues. These chains would get dirty during the day, and they would get chipped, so maintenance would come in at night, and they would have to paint them every night and clean them, and it was costing a lot of money, and it was taking a lot of time. Raleigh replaced the white chains throughout the park with anodized aluminum chains. It saved a lot of time and a lot of money. He also introduced fiberglass as a replacement for wood structures throughout the park. Wood would rot over time, and fiberglass was used to replace the wooden handrails throughout the park. And also, he replaced the lampposts with fiberglass ones because the lampposts would eventually rust. So he did a lot of things that people may not have been aware of. In 1967, Dick Irvine was named Vice President and Chief Operations Officer for WED Enterprises, which eventually became Walt Disney Imagineering. He shaped the master plan for Walt Disney World in Orlando, Florida, and continued to oversee development of all Disney attractions until his retirement from the Walt Disney Company in 1973. Now, Dick Irvine put Raleigh Crump in charge of the Fantasy Land attractions in Walt Disney World. Raleigh had many ideas, but before any of them could go forward, he needed to pass them by and be approved by management. One idea that he had, but never really got approval, was to put together a dock ride that celebrated Alice in Wonderland. Now, he envisioned this ride to have teacups as ride vehicles, and these teacups would take guests through the ride, and the guests, if they wanted to, could spin the teacups, turn them around. That idea never was not approved. And when you think about it, as much as Raleigh Crump loved the idea of having a hand in the design of Fantasyland, his hands were somewhat tied. One of the problems that he had was that he noticed that there was a philosophical theming difference between Disneyland and Disney World. He felt that the theming that was currently throughout Disneyland was not carried over into the design and development of Disney World. This theming had strayed so far from what he felt Walt would have had in mind when he discussed Walt Disney World with Walt before Walt passed. To give you a little bit of an idea as to what is being meant when I say a philosophical design difference, for those who have been to Disneyland and Walt Disney World, you will notice that Walt Disney World did not have as many trees or areas that really kind of fell in line with whatever land you were in. Walt Disney World, specifically Fantasyland, before the expansion, recent expansion over the last 10 years, was very much all concrete. If you have paid attention over the last 10 years, that has changed. Specifically, today, December 2023, if you go into Epcot, you will notice behind Spaceship Earth a completely different approach to a design. This is one of the things that bothered Wally Crump about Walt Disney World. That it upset him so much, but he became well known in the theme park business, and he was soon hired by Irvin Field, who was president of Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus, and he was asked to draw up a master plan for a theme park with a circus theme, and this park would be called Circus World. It would be built in Florida. So Raleigh put together a very organized design with a huge carousel in the center of the park, and on the outer spokes of the park, there would be specific attractions. Sound familiar, doesn't it? But because of a number of unforeseen financial problems, funding issues, the original size of this huge theme park was greatly reduced. It was still built, and as a matter of fact, on a personal note, back in the 70s, I actually got to visit Circus World. And although it had a very robust circus theme, it did not have a robust size. And at best, it was a half a day theme park. But one of the most interesting attractions at Circus World was a theater in which the audience was treated to a special film that made the audience experience a thrilling roller coaster ride. That was pretty cool. So Raleigh had time on his hands, but in 1974, Knott's Berry Farm contacted Raleigh and asked him to design a dock ride for their theme park. The ride to be designed was to take us through a gypsy forest where there would be a gypsy camp and a gypsy fair. And Raleigh was really intrigued by this, so he started drawing designs and how scenes would be and everything. And he became very, very involved in it. But as far as what the theme of the ride was going to be, that went through a change. One of the owners, principal owner for Knott's Berry Farm, Marion Knott, decided No, I don't think I want this to be a gypsy-themed ride. I think I'd like it to be a western-themed ride. So Raleigh went back to the drawing board, started doing changes, and okay, so instead of a gypsy clothes, this one's going to have a cowboy clothes, and he started doing this and doing that. Wait a minute. Marion changed her mind again. No, let's go back to the gypsy forest theme as we originally planned. Okay. So he went. Luckily, he did not throw away his designs for that, and he, you know, started work on them again. However, the final decision was, now let's make it a Roaring Twenties ride, and that's what happened. So that was a little frustrating period for Raleigh. Now, when plans started being discussed for Epcot at Walt Disney World, Marty Sklar, who was in charge, asked Raleigh to come back to the Disney Company to help them design the park. Now, here's where a little urban legend gets to be revealed as not exactly true. We've all been told that, well, you know, there were two designs for Epcot, one by John Hench, one by Marty Sklar, and while the powers that be were in a room deciding which one they would go with, Hench and Sklar had their models outside the room and they pushed them together and they said, hey, why don't we build a theme park based on the composite of our two designs? I don't think that really happened. This is how Raleigh Crump recalled how it happened. Marty Sklar, who was in charge of the project, really wasn't happy with what John Hench had come up with for the design. And there were others who did not receive it too well. So Marty Sklar contacted Raleigh Crump to help. Now, Raleigh came up with a design. He presented it to Marty Sklar, John Hench, and a number of HPs. And boy, Hench was livid that Crump had been brought in to develop a master plan, which he had spent a lot of time putting together. So there were some, I would say, tense moments when this happened, and Hench and Crump got into a shouting match when Raleigh's design was shown, and they were talking about each other's design, and Raleigh was saying, well, what about this here with yours that doesn't work? And John Hench would say, this blah blah for yours. It got to be really, really involved. I would say it became heated. But after some discussion and pointing out the low and high points of both designs, it was decided a new design incorporating the best of both worlds would be drawn up by John Hench. And he did. Again, this sheds light on the urban legend that John and Marty literally pushed their two designs together to form what is today's Epcot, when in actuality, it was a very animated discussion on the two plans, one by John Hench and one by Raleigh Crump, to recognize both the best and worst of both plans. Raleigh Crump, under Sklar's direction, continued to be involved in the design of the park, and it was Raleigh who came up with putting live plants in the land pavilion. Again, something John Hench was totally against, but Marty Sklar liked the idea and he approved of it. Crump was also the architect for the original Electric Umbrella restaurant, and at that time Michael Eisner loved that name and he wanted to name the entire building with that moniker, the Electric Umbrella Building. But it was eventually named Interventions, and the Electric Umbrella restaurant was part of that building. I know it sounds like Hench and Crump hated each other, but nothing was further from the truth. John Hench was actually Raleigh Crump's mentor, and they had tremendous respect for each other. In fact, they both recognized that their arguments and disagreements usually resulted in projects coming out better than originally designed. So I just wanted to point that out. They were very proud of their design work, and they defended their design work, but you know, two heads better than one in that particular case. Let's move forward to 1983. This is where Jacques Cousteau approached Raleigh Crump and discussed plans for an Ocean Center pavilion that the Cousteau Society was envisioning. This is a very interesting story because this turned out to be a strange endeavor for Raleigh Crump. He spent a considerable amount of time and effort on the design for this pavilion. And the problem was that he had put together so much time and effort into it that he was not aware of that there were some financial issues that eventually put this project on hold indefinitely. Well, Raleigh picked up on some other projects. He needed to, you know, bring in money, so he accepted projects that he had been putting on hold, and he got very involved in them. However, 6 months after the Cousteau project was put on hold, he was asked to come back to work on the project, but he was so involved with 4 or 5 other projects, there was just no way he could come back. But he did agree that he would walk through all the plans in detail with whomever would pick up the project. And he did so. He even went over to France and talked with the new designers and engineers and went over every detail, answered every question. He just felt that he needed to do that. And he did a great job. And the Ocean Center was finally built. But when Raleigh paid his first visit to this Ocean Center Pavilion, he was flabbergasted to see that those new designers and imagineers, who he had spent so much time in talking and explaining the details for all the various attractions and components and areas, he found out they had changed his design a lot. And not only had they changed the design, but in doing so, they went way over budget. Millions of dollars over budget. They tried to recoup this by charging pretty steep admission to the center, but it was way too high, and word got around and attendance had dropped, and within 6 months, that pavilion was in financial trouble. Cousteau decided to sell it, and it was sold to Arab businessmen. That was one of the strangest episodes in Raleigh Crump's career. You can see that he led a very creative life, and by a creative life, it was both in and out of his work with Disney. He eventually came home to the Disney Company in 1992 as an executive designer of Walt Disney Imagineering. And during that stint, he redesigned Epcot's Land Pavilion, especially what they would call the Great Hall. He replaced Kitchen Cabaret with Food Rocks. Well, and Food Rocks now is where Soarin' resides. He replaced Communicore with Interventions. He did a lot of things in Epcot. He was always one of those people that the company would go to for any redesign of any of the theme parks. I can tell you that there's just not enough time to report all of Raleigh Crump's accomplishments. There were so many of them. But, you know, you can be sure that whether you visit Disneyland or Walt Disney World, you're probably going to experience one of these many accomplishments. Accomplishments which started out as a dream from the forgotten Imagineer, Raleigh Crump. Thanks for listening, and if you want to learn more about Raleigh Crump, I suggest you read the book, It's Kind of a Cute Story, written by Raleigh Crump. So for my colleagues, Michelle Scribner and Chris Heliopoulos, this is Mike Scopa saying Happy New Year, and we'll see you on the road and in the parks.
We hope you enjoyed listening to today's episode of the Mickey Miles and More podcast. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles and More podcast, this is Rick Gregg saying thanks for listening and all your support. And until next time, we'll see you on the road.